Chapter 108. Mr. Samuel Weller, being interested with a mission of love, proceeds to execute it. With what success will hereinafter appear. During the whole of next day, Sam kept Mr. Winkle steadily in sight, fully determined not to take his eyes off him for one instant, until he should receive express instructions from the fountainhead. However disagreeable Sam's very close watch and great vigilance were to Mr. Winkle, he thought it better to bear with him than, by any act of violent opposition, to hazard being carried away by force, which Mr. Weller more than once strongly hinted was the line of conduct that a strict sense of duty prompted him to pursue. There is little reason to doubt that Sam would very speedily have quieted his scruples by bearing Mr. Winkle back to Bath, bound hand and foot, had not Mr. Pickwick's prompt attention to the note which Dowler had undertaken to deliver forestalled any such proceeding. In short, at 8 o'clock in the evening, Mr. Pickwick himself walked into the coffee room of the Bush Tavern, and told Sam with a smile, to his very great relief, that he had done quite right, and it was unnecessary for him to mount guard any longer. "I thought it better to come myself," said Mr. Pickwick, addressing Mr. Winkle, as Sam disencumbered him of his great coat and traveling shawl, to ascertain, before I gave my consent to Sam's employment in this matter, that you are quite in earnest and serious with respect to this young lady. Serious, from my heart, from my soul. Returned Mr. Winkle, with great energy. Remember, said Mr. Pickwick, with beaming eyes, we met her at our excellent and hospitable friend's, Winkle. It would be an ill return to tamper lightly, and without due consideration, with this young lady's affections. I'll not allow that, sir. I'll not allow it. I have no such intention, indeed, exclaimed Mr. Winkle warmly. I have considered the matter well, for a long time, and I feel that my happiness is bound up in her. That's what we call tying it up in a small parcel, sir, interposed Mr. Weller, with an agreeable smile. Mr. Winkle looked somewhat stern at this interruption, and Mr. Pickwick angrily requested his attendant not to jest with one of the best feelings of our nature, to which Sam replied that he wouldn't if he was aware on it. But there were so many on them that he hardly knowed which was the best ones when he heard them mentioned. Mr. Winkle then recounted what had passed between himself and Mr. Ben Allen relative to Arabella, stated that his object was to gain an interview with the young lady and make a formal disclosure of his passion, and declared his conviction, founded on certain dark hints and mutterings of the aforesaid Ben, that wherever she was at present immured, it was somewhere near the Downs. And this was his whole stock of knowledge or suspicion on the subject. With this very slight clue to guide him, it was determined that Mr. Weller should start next morning on an expedition of discovery. It was also arranged that Mr. Pickwick and Mr. Winkle, who were less confident of their powers, should parade the town meanwhile, and accidentally drop in upon Mr. Bob Sawyer in the course of the day, in the hope of seeing or hearing something of the young lady's whereabouts. Accordingly, next morning, Sam Weller issued forth upon his quest, in no way daunted by the very discouraging prospect before him. And away he walked, up one street, and down another, up one hill and down another, only it's all uphill at Clifton without meeting with anything or anybody that tended to throw the faintest light on the matter in hand. Many were the colloquies into which Sam entered with grooms who were airing horses on roads, and nursemaids who were airing children in lanes. But nothing could Sam elicit from either the first mentioned or the last, which bore the slightest reference to the object of his artfully prosecuted inquiries. There were a great many young ladies in a great many houses, the greater part whereof were shrewdly suspected by the male and female domestics to be deeply attached to somebody, or perfectly ready to become so, if opportunity afforded. But as none among these young ladies was Miss Arabella Allen, the information left Sam at exactly the old point of wisdom at which he had stood before. Sam struggled across the downs against a good high wind, wondering whether it was always necessary to hold your hat on with both hands in that part of the country, and came to a shady by place, about which were sprinkled several little villas of quiet and secluded appearance. Outside a stable door at the bottom of a long back lane without a thoroughfare, a groom in undress was idling about, apparently persuading himself that he was doing something with a spade and a wheelbarrow. We may remark, in this place, that we have scarcely ever seen a groom near a stable, in his lazy moments, who has not been, to a greater or less extent, the victim of this singular delusion. Sam thought he might as well talk to this groom, as to anyone else, especially as he was very tired with walking, and there was a good large stone just opposite the wheelbarrow, so he strolled down the lane, and, seating himself on the stone, opened a conversation with the ease and freedom for which he was remarkable. "Mornin', old friend," apostrophe said Sam. "Arternoon, you mean," apostrophe replied the groom, casting a surly look at Sam. "You're worry right, old friend," apostrophe said Sam. "I do mean arternoon. How are you?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "Why, I don't find myself much the better for seeing of you," apostrophe replied the ill-tempered groom. "That's worry odd that is," apostrophe said Sam, "for you look so uncommon cheerful, and seem altogether so lively, that it does one's heart good to see you." Apostrophe, the surly groom looked surlier still at this, but not sufficiently so, to produce any effect upon Sam, who immediately inquired, with a countenance of great anxiety, whether his master's name was not Walker. "No, it ain't," apostrophe said the groom. "Nor Brown, I suppose?" Apostrophe apostrophe said Sam. "No, it ain't." Apostrophe, "Nor Wilson?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "No. Nor that it either," apostrophe said the groom. "Well," apostrophe replied Sam, "then I'm mistaken, and he hasn't got the honor o' my acquaintance, which I thought he had." "Don't wait here out o' compliment to me," apostrophe said Sam, as the groom wheeled in the barrow, and prepared to shut the gate. "Ease afore ceremony, old boy, I'll excuse you." Apostrophe, "I'd knock your head off for half a crown," apostrophe said the surly groom, bolting one half of the gate. "Couldn't afford to have it done on those terms," apostrophe rejoined Sam. "It 'ud be worth a life's board wages at least, to you, and 'ud be cheap at that. Make my compliments indoors. Tell 'em not to wait dinner for me, and say they needn't mind putting any by, for it'll be cold afore I come in." Apostrophe, in reply to this, the groom waxing very wroth, muttered a desire to damage somebody's person, but disappeared without carrying it into execution, slamming the door angrily after him, and wholly unheeding Sam's affectionate request that he would leave him a lock of his hair before he went. Sam continued to sit on the large stone, meditating upon what was best to be done, and revolving in his mind a plan for knocking at all the doors within 5 miles of Bristol, taking them at 150 or 200 a day, and endeavoring to find Miss Arabella by that expedient, when accident all of a sudden threw in his way what he might have sat there for a twelvemonth, and yet not found without it. Into the lane where he sat, there opened 3 or 4 garden gates, belonging to as many houses, which though detached from each other, were only separated by their gardens. As these were large and long, and well planted with trees, the houses were not only at some distance off, but the greater part of them were nearly concealed from view. Sam was sitting with his eyes fixed upon the dust heap outside the next gate to that by which the groom had disappeared, profoundly turning over in his mind the difficulties of his present undertaking, when the gate opened, and a female servant came out into the lane, to shake some bedside carpets. Sam was so very busy with his own thoughts, that it is probable he would have taken no more notice of the young woman than just raising his head and remarking that she had a very neat and pretty figure, if his feelings of gallantry had not been most strongly roused by observing that she had no one to help her, and that the carpets seemed too heavy for her single strength. Mr. Weller was a gentleman of great gallantry in his own way, and he no sooner remarked this circumstance than he hastily rose from the large stone, and advanced towards her. My dear, apostrophe said Sam, sliding up with an air of great respect, you'll spoil that worry pretty figure out o' all proportion, if you shake them carpets by yourself. Let me help you. Apostrophe, the young lady, who had been coyly affecting not to know that a gentleman was so near, turned round as Sam spoke, no doubt indeed she said so, afterwards, to decline this offer from a perfect stranger when instead of speaking, she started back, and uttered a half-suppressed scream. Sam was scarcely less staggered, for in the countenance of the well-shaped female servant, he beheld the very features of his Valentine, the pretty housemaid from Mr. Nupkins. Why, Mary, my dear, apostrophe said Sam. Lawk, Mr. Weller, apostrophe said Mary, how you do frighten one. Apostrophe, Sam made no verbal answer to this complaint, nor can we precisely say what reply he did make. We merely know that after a short pause Mary said, Lor, do a done, Mr. Weller. Apostrophe, and that his hat had fallen off a few moments before from both, of which tokens we should be disposed to infer that one kiss, or more, had passed between the parties. Why, how did you come here? Apostrophe said Mary, when the conversation to which this interruption had been offered, was resumed. Of course I came to look arter you, my darlin', apostrophe replied Mr. Weller, for once permitting his passion to get the better of his veracity. And how did you know I was here? Apostrophe inquired Mary. Who could have told you that I took another service at Ipswich, and that they afterwards moved all the way here? Who could have told you that, Mr. Weller? To be sure, apostrophe said Sam, with a cunning look, that's the pint. Who could have told me? It wasn't Mr. Muzzle, was it? Apostrophe inquired Mary. Oh, no. Replied Sam, with a solemn shake of the head, it warned him. It must have been the cook, said Mary. Oh, course it must, said Sam. Well, I never heard the like of that. Exclaimed Mary. No more did I, said Sam. But Mary, my dear, here Sam's manner grew extremely affectionate. Mary, my dear, I've got another affair in hand as is worry pressin'. There's one o' my governor's friends, Mr. Winkle, you remember him? Him in the green coat? Said Mary. Oh, yes, I remember him. Said Sam, he's in a horrid state o' love, reglarly confizzled, and done over with it. Lore. Interposed Mary. Yes, said Sam, but that's nothing, if we could find out the young woman. And here Sam, with many digressions upon the personal beauty of Mary, and the unspeakable tortures he had experienced since he last saw her, gave a faithful account of Mr. Winkle's present predicament. Well, said Mary, I never did. Of course not, said Sam, and nobody never did, nor never will neither. And here am I a walkin' about like the wandering Jew, a sportin' character you have perhaps heard on, Mary, my dear, as vos always do in a match agent time, and never went to sleep looking arter this here Miss Arabella Allen. Miss who? Said Mary, in great astonishment. Miss Arabella Allen, said Sam. Goodness gracious! Said Mary, pointing to the garden door which the sulky groom had locked after him. Why, it's that very house. She's been living there these 6 weeks. Their upper housemaid, which is lady's maid too, told me all about it over the wash-house palins before the family was out of bed, one morning. What, the worry next door to you? Said Sam. The very next, replied Mary. Mr. Weller was so deeply overcome on receiving this intelligence that he found it absolutely necessary to cling to his fair informant for support, and divers little love passages had passed between them before he was sufficiently collected to return to the subject. "Well," apostrophe said Sam at length, "if this don't beat cockfightin', nothing never will, as the Lord Mayor said, when the Chief Secretary of State proposed his missus's health arter dinner. That worry next house. Why, I've got a message to her as I've been a-trying all day to deliver." Apostrophe, "Ah," apostrophe said Mary, "but you can't deliver it now, because she only walks in the garden in the evening, and then only for a very little time. She never goes out without the old lady." Apostrophe, Sam ruminated for a few moments, and finally hit upon the following plan of operations: that he should return just at dusk, the time at which Arabella invariably took her walk, and, being admitted by Mary into the garden of the house to which she belonged, would contrive to scramble up the wall, beneath the overhanging boughs of a large pear tree, which would effectually screen him from observation, would there deliver his message, and arrange, if possible, an interview on behalf of Mr. Winkle for the ensuing evening at the same hour. Having made this arrangement with great dispatch, he assisted Mary in the long-deferred Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.